I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. I am Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and I have a return guest. And this is a special episode that I'm going to call HRV University for Chiropractors, because I've had a lot of questions, not only in our Vitality Shift, but just people that we're talking to over Facebook. And a lot of people have more questions about heart rate variability and how we can use that application in our practice to deepen our conversations with our practice members. And so I said, why don't I get the smartest dude in the world on that? In my world, anyway, Dr. David Fletcher. So welcome back to the call.
Hey, Don. Thanks a million. And it's always great to be known as the smartest of something, but let's make it the practical smartest of something, hopefully.
100%. And like we said before, you're not just the smartest. You're an inspiring, funny guy. So, right? We don't want to frame you into just Dr. David Fletcher's only just the smart guy. He's like a super awesome guy, too. For those of you, if you've just caught onto the podcast in the last few episodes, please go back, drdonmcdonald.com, look up in the archives and watch the first or listen to the first podcast we did with Dr. David Fletcher, because it goes over his whole history, which is very entertaining. It was a very entertaining episode. I got a lot of great feedback on that, and you'll get to know Dr. David Fletcher, the man. But today we're going to talk about Dr. David Fletcher, the owner of CLA, and show us how to dig right into their to the HRV. So, first question I want to start off with is, what is HRV?
Well, HRV, Don, stands for heart rate variability. And one of the things that we know is that a beating heart has to be generated from both an interplay of the sympathetic part of the autonomic nervous system and a parasympathetic part. And so we can look at any organ system, because each organ system has that interplay going on. But what better way to look at the rhythms of how a body keeps itself in balance than by looking at a beating heart? And so we're blessed to have a autonomic pacemaker, if you would, built into the right atrium, which is the sinoatrial node. And it has a feed that comes in, a motor feed to allow the heart to beat. It has a feed from the parasympathetics that comes from the 10th cranial, the vagus nerve that works its way down through the foramen magnum and down into it. And I put in the word foramen magnum there because that becomes very much a chiropractic influencer of heart rate variability. And we also have the sympathetic feeds coming from T1 to 4 on the spinal motors, sympathetic spinal motors. And so as a result of that, we have this incredible opportunity to look at heart rate variability as a modulator of a central oscillator. And I know that sort of sounds weird to everybody else, but when we take a look through a chiropractic lens, or even through looking at complex systems, and we take a look at what matters in complex systems, obviously human health being one of the most complex that we can even look into, what you have to do is you have to look at the physical principle, which almost becomes metaphysical, but a physical principle known as coherence. And when we talk about coherence in chiropractic, it's the same word that BJ used, which was the state of ease. And so complex systems, and this is really important for everybody to know, complex systems, especially biological complex systems, are always striving to become more efficient. And there's a reason for that in complex biological systems, and that is that the more energy you have, the more energy you have to thrive, not just survive. And so the realities are is that from a human perspective, our DNA is designed not only to protect us in fight-flight scenarios, but also to strive to consider what the environment is doing so that we can begin to look at, or we can't look at it, but the body in its complexities designs strategies to maximize its experience. And by doing so, it has to be in a coherent state. So One of the things that we know is that the nervous system is learning all the time and regulating all the time. And so the autonomic nervous system is that division of the central nervous system, which is constantly interplaying in that regulation. And so, Don, to do that, what we have to do is look at the interplay between the frequencies that fire through the sympathetics and the parasympathetics. And so we get something that's called heart rate variability. But you might want to ask the question, what has a variability got to do with anything? Because if it was just simply looking at the frequencies, that's an easy thing to do. But what is the variability? So why don't you ask the question?
Don? Yes. What is the variability?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Let me share this with you, is that that same complex system is constantly learning about its environment by not being stuck in a fixed pattern. In other words, it's not just simply grinding itself out. It has to work through a nonlinear chaotic response so that it can constantly be learning to adapt. And so let me give this as an example. If someone were to take their pulse, and it's real simple math, if someone were to take their pulse and you had 60 beats per minute, you would have an interbeat interval of one beat per second, 60 beats, 60 seconds. And we might take our pulse, you know, you might hold your hand and take your pulse, do your pulse like this, and sort of go on that sort of rhythm of it. But if you were to take a look in a very well-timed, using well-timed instruments, you'd actually see that those interbeat intervals, I'm making this up, but they fluctuate between 0.893 to 0.798 to 0.899 to 932. You know, you go through these things.
Right.
And you think, well, wait a minute. Why would this system be constantly, adjusting, if you want to use that term, adjusting itself? And that is because it's a smart system. It's listening, adapting, and listening and adapting.
Right.
And as a result of that, you have to have variability in those interbeat intervals. Mm-hmm. The right amount, that is.
Right. So not too much.
No. If there's too much, they call that arrhythmia. Mm-hmm. So if we have just the right amount, and there are ranges that have been understood, we can look and say, is that very complex system?
Tell us a little bit more about that chaos theory that you were telling us about.
Yeah, so these complex systems, they're always trying to reorganize themselves. And I think that's a key word within a chiropractic paradigm, is the ease and reorganization. And so what we're really looking at is this really smart system listening to its environment and making these incredible adaptive responses. And so the key to understanding HRV and the use of, whether it's in chiropractic or otherwise, is a very simple word. Everything that I've said is okay and variability is okay. But if you do just one takeaway, the word is adaptation or adaptive. And what you really have to understand is that HRV gives you a window into two things in primarily. Number one, how much reserve does that individual have to continue to adapt? In other words, how full is their tank? Mm-hmm. And the second is, what balance do they have between the sympathetic and parasympathetics? And so when we went to design a chiropractic, window into it. And listen, we're taking the same data that a physician would use, that an exercise physiologist would use. The data is data, and the way you calculate variability, IBIs and otherwise, is all the same. But it's the lens under which you apply the data that makes all the difference, Don.
Right.
So When we decided we wanted to take a look at the value of what it took to be in a chiropractic setting for HRV, we created very simple, nomenclature, which was the AAI, which was the Autonomic Activity Index, which is the amount of, if you will, the lift that they have. So we're looking at the vertical plot when you're looking at our graph. And then you're taking a look at the ABI, which is another way of saying the balance between the autonomic balance index, which is what they call the HFLF ratio, which is the amount of frequencies in the sympathetic system compared to the frequencies in the parasympathetic system. There's also another system called VLF, but we take that into account through different calculations. So here's the realities, is that when you get a plot in our design graph, and I think, you know, seriously, I've looked at so many different systems, but when you take a look at the way we plot on what we call the rainbow graph, then what we're really looking at is this incredible opportunity to look at that interplay between the amount of energy that's in the operating system, you know, and the balance under which it's operating. And here's the really cool thing, Don, and then we should open up, you know, why chiropractors should use it, is that for it to maintain itself in a high zone, it has to be in balance. Mm-hmm. If you stay, it's like anything else. If you stay out of balance for a period of time, you're going to drain your energy. You know, your system's going to fight itself and it's going to lose its adaptive edge. And so as a result of that adaptive response, we can understand the interplay between those two. And this becomes either fun, which I think it is, or confusing, because we sometimes get people that are way out of balance, but are incredibly on their own fitness and wellness track. And then you get the people that are way up scale, and they're in stage 4 cancer, you know. So you have to understand what we're reading it for and how we as chiropractors influence.
No, that's awesome. And I think, and this is a question that I'll just start with, is that, you know, we've always had the substation since I started practice, because yep. I never even practiced ever without it. So with thermography and surface EMG. And so what was kind of the biggest indicator why you guys wanted to add HRV in to already go with your complement, because we love that thermography and the surface EMG, and what was that going to complete the puzzle by adding HRV?
Yeah, so I mean, the history of chiropractic instrumentation begins with thermography and then sort of moves over to EMG, and what you're really looking at are spinal neural inputs. And so when we made a decision that we wanted to go into adding more of a global response to the neurology of it. Mm-hmm. We considered, really there was no only one consideration, because HRV was emerging. We've been into HRV now for, I think it's 12 years. So we were pretty much ahead of the curve. And when I say we, it was really Dr. Christopher Kent, who was very, very high on it. And he had always in our conversations brought in the concept of adaptability. There's also the other side of it, Don, which is, well, there's two things that really matter. Mm-hmm. If we're going to elevate the excellence and the vision of chiropractic as being more than just a back pain model, we wanted to bring in an instrument that was non-spinal. Okay, right. so that was a high priority for CLA, was to bring a non-spinal instrument base in, but that was organized around the principle of the subluxation. Mm-hmm. The second thing we had to do was it had to be easily applied and had to have two other criterion, had to be incredibly well-regarded and understood within the other medical professions. And I'm not saying we're medical, but you get it within the other healthcare professions. So like EMG and like thermography, it had to have a corpus of knowledge that was well-researched even outside of chiropractic.
Right.
And the other thing is that it had to be incredibly easily applied with reproducibility. So reliability, validity, and reproducibility. And the reason I bring all of that together is that we sat in meetings and tried to determine if EEG was going to be the next great thing. And EEG at the time didn't have anything other than some very messy applications. And the truth of it is that heart rate variability blew the doors off of EEG. And perhaps in the future, we might be able to look at what EEG in a chiropractic setting looks like. Yeah. You know, and it should be. It should be brought into the storyline. But on a day-to-day practitioner basis, there's nothing easier than looking at a 3 or 5 minute collection period and just understanding adaptability. It was built for chiropractic.
Well, and it's so perfect, because I know even the surface EMG is such a great a segue when you're explaining this to practice members, because if they're tapped in their reserves and their efficiency their motor efficiency is horrible. There's no leftover energy at the end of the day to go back to recharge that battery.
That's right. And you know what, when it was sort of one of those aha moments, and I know you've heard me, you know, describe this, but when we put together the interplay between those three instruments you talked about, the HRV, the thermal, and the EMG, I sort of, you know, and I've been playing with this probably more than anybody else on the planet over the course of the past, you know, 6-7 years, in terms of the interplay of those three. The realities are, is that I sort of, you know, developed the easiest way to describe through a chiropractic lens, and we refer to it as RED, R-E-D. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we put PET on the end just to remember what you're doing. But RED is the principle that like everything else, it begins with adaptability. So reserve, it's paramount to understand what the patient's reserve is. So let's take that stage 4 cancer patient who has a lot of high reserve. You know, that can be very confusing to a clinician, but to you and I who work in the adaptive vitality world, it's like a high five, buddy. You're doing the best you can with what you have. And you've got the resources and the reserve to take whatever it takes. We also find that there is that reserve lacking in people who overtrain. You know, so we get these uncharacteristic, you know, conversations of people going, "What do you mean? I'm not stressed in my life. I'm wonderful. I work out 63 times a week. What do you mean? I'm well.
Right.
You know, I eat. I'm gluten free and paleo. And I can't understand. Your equipment must be broken. You know, that's the standard, right?
Yeah.
And so HRV is a very real, very very real reading to give you a snapshot. But here's the other thing that matters, Don. Is that it appears to be a lagging indicator of the combined context of stress. Mm-hmm. Now, they do put a little bit of a caveat on that. If there is an immediate or ultra traumatic experience, it will move itself. Well, what does that mean? Well, it should, let's take it so that when you wake up in the morning and you find, they describe HRV as being best taken upon awakening, because what you're really looking at with adaptability is the adaptive reserve. So if there ever was a time in the day you should have the best reserve,
it should be
when you wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. So what we find is that that's a pretty stable indicator. On the other hand, what we know is that life goes on from the time you wake up in the morning, and you can take snapshots here and there and otherwise. But the combined response, if you do a, say, midday event, which is, say, coming to the chiropractor and doing your testing midday, you're really looking at, so long as you didn't, you know, have somebody pull a gun on you, or, you know, you get in road rage, or you know, had a divorce along the day, you're pretty stable. And this is in the literature. You're pretty stable to see that your general, it's going to wiggle a little bit because that's the adaptive response, but your general plot point is pretty consistent compared to that morning set point. So when they take a look at it, the other instruments are much more reactive to the moment because of the spinal nerve inputs, you know, the EMGs and the thermals, but the HRV tends to be a longer lasting set point of the combined responses of adaptability.
No, 100%. And I think one of the questions I have is, what are the things that could give someone an artificially high reserve? Because there's people we know from the history that we've done, and we've dived into them, that we know that they don't have reserves, but they're reading like they have high reserves. And maybe you can just give us some of the examples of why that might be happening.
Well, the number one rationale behind that is drugs. You know, drugs work. If you have been sick, sure, drugs can be looked at as a stressor to the system. But they also put people back. Remember, we started this conversation about coherence?
Yeah.
Well, a disease state is a state of very incoherent response. In other words, it's grinding, it's fighting itself and everything else. And, you know, an example would be, you know, let's just take a very simple example of inflammation. And I don't want people leaving this thinking that it's a good indicator of inflammation. I'm just using this as a discussion point.
Yeah.
But we know that inflammation or even a fever, for instance, is a very positive physiological event. It's a good thing, right? Yeah. Until it becomes a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And so if you were to take an HRV reading of a system that was going in a very acute inflammatory response, even though it's a good thing, it's chewing up the resources. Inflammation tends to be sympathetic dominant, and as a result of that, it's there. And if you take, God forbid, but if you take an anti-inflammatory, it reduces the overload on the system and it brings it back to neutral and gives an artificial lift. So drugs tend to be really the bigger story. Any cardiac-based drugs, when you think of it, most drugs that start with anti, you know, like antidepressants, anti-inflammatories, all tend to suppress the expressive vitality responsiveness that the body is going through to a point. Mm-hmm. And so you can get this, and I always refer to that as painting over the rust. You know, yeah. when you take a very complex system and a very degraded complex system, you are definitely looking at probably drugs being the number one. The other, you know, when we start to see the better than normals, we should also remember that aging by the nature of just being aged tends to reduce the reserve. That should come as no surprise.
Right.
Or the corollary to that is to say that youth have a very high set point.
Right.
So we should always be looking for high set points in there. And if we see a high set point in a child, that's good, or child, youth, adult, that's good. So we shouldn't be surprised about that one. One of the things that we should be more surprised about is that when we start to get, you know, these incomprehensible conversations about people, like I said, that are much more associated with better scores than they should be, but also those who get the imbalanced scores when they think they're leading that wellness lifestyle. And that's the perfect way to lead into this conversation, because to hold a good reserve, the R, if you would, to hold a good reserve, it isn't about modulating your sympathetics. I want everybody to hear this. Mm-hmm. Holding a good reserve and getting you back to a neutral balance is about re-engaging the parasympathetics.
Right.
That's such a key point, because many people look at their lifestyles and say, oh my gosh, I'm in this fight flight, you know, dramatic lifestyle. I'm grinding my gears. Well, that certainly is going to push you down, you know, out of balance. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is, it has a much greater effect because it blunts the parasympathetic feeds. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge point, Don.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things is, and I had this just a little while ago, is I did a reevaluation on a practice member that has been a practice member of mine for a long time. And all of her other vital signs that we go through were good, except for HRV was still in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, she was so disappointed that her HRV was in the 60s. And I said, well, let me just ask you a question. Is your brain a happy place with rainbows and unicorns, or is it a chaotic mess? And then she started laughing because I had good rapport with her, and it just some people's personality styles. And again, I'll see if you found this, but just with some people's personality styles and the environment they live in, it's going to restrict them forever fully building their reserves. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Listen, when we talk about reserves, and you know, I love language, you know, we're talking about the R's: resting, restoration, reorganization, resiliencies. Okay. Yeah. That's what reserve is all about. Mm-hmm. And for you to build back your state of recovery, you have to do two things. And this is really important, is that you have to re-engage the parasympathetics. Yeah. Okay. And you have to reorganize around a restorative lifestyle.
Right.
And Don, you and I many years ago, and I wouldn't say many, but it's a number of years ago, ended up blowing out our adrenals.
Yep.
You know, we got overwhelmed in the world that we had chosen. And when we overdid it, one of the attributes, and thank God for Brandy for sharing this with us and Michael, but one of the things that we were used to doing, you and I, was to, you know, imagine that fitness was the source of all recovery.
Yep.
And what we started to do was we started to think, oh, well, I'm in this really deteriorative state. I need to just work out harder or do more workouts, right?
Yeah. High-end cardio, baby.
Yeah, more cardio. And you know, what happened, and I remember we were, you know, the three of us were, actually Michael was there too. We were teaching down in Australia, and I was going for a run on the beach. And I kept blowing out my calves. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, long flights and everything else. And finally, Brandy sits me down and she says, you got nothing left in your tank, man, I'm telling you. And so, you know, it's making suggestive things that you can't go and exercise in the mornings if your HRV is as low as mine was. And as you know, if your adrenals are as tanked as yours and mine were, you have to really adapt where you're doing. Does it mean you have to quit exercise? No, but this is where you get it. And so you talked about personalities. Those personalities, those A-type driven personalities, and even the amiable, like you're super amiable,
yep.
But you know what? You're a driven amiable, you mm-hmm. know? And so as a result of that, it's going to draw on your reserves for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's such a great, because I love this. It's always changing the conversation, because you'll have that practice member comes in and said, oh, I just lift the garbage can and I blew my low back.
Yeah.
Now we have a tool that you can actually bring it back to their life, and that their reserves are low. Because again, if your reserves are low, you don't have enough energy to hold stuff together in your body.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, we always talk about those, and for those of you who are on and know our plot system, it's a rainbow graph. And if you look at the different quadrants, the low left quadrant is unfortunately where many of our practice members are going to come in, that it's out of balance and they have low reserve. And so low left indicates really a sympathetic overload. And so it's imagining it that they're sitting at a stop sign, because it's a test that's taken at rest. So they're sitting at a stop sign and they've been revving their engine and their tank is getting low. Yeah. And so, you know, these are the people who, and this is one of the reasons that I love our system. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, why you need to, if you're a practicing doctor, you need to have clinical grade evidence to understand where you're taking them.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we've been, you know, absolutely consistent about within our protocols is that we are obsessive about getting the testing done at rest, mm-hmm. because it's a controllable variable. And so when we put together our HRV system, we change the name of it. HRV is the data you get out. The actual instrument is a much more complex instrument, because while we are testing your rates and rhythms of your heart, yes. we're simultaneously testing your galvanic skin response and your temperatures. So what we refer to as the NeuroPulse or the pulse wave profiler, which is the instrument, is actually an autonomic station. It's actually taking live streaming temperature, live streaming GSR, live streaming heart rate, and comparing all of those at that same instant. And the reason we're doing that is that we need to know during the collection window of 3 to 5 minutes, is that person being collected at rest? Because if they are not at rest, which you can detect on the GSR especially, if they are not at rest, it means that there's this agitated collection, which is going to throw the balance off between sympathetic and parasympathetics. Mm-hmm. Don, I was just doing a scrape of data. You just don't understand how much data we have. We have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of HRV scans that are sitting in our data tranche. And so we have the luxury of looking at data tranches that will allow us to review what we're doing. One of the first things we did was we took a look at a 5-minute collection, which is a gold standard if you're in the pathology business.
Right.
If you're looking at heart rate and rhythms associated with the pathology of the rate and rhythm of the heart. On the other hand, you go to the other end of the spectrum, and many of the HRV apps, which I think we should talk about.
Many
of the other HRV apps collect anywhere from 30 seconds to 2 minutes, even if they're using a polar heart strap and everything else. And what we know is that in our data tranche that we looked at, 3 minutes of quieted collection is a certainly adequate string of data for us to make a wonderful interpretation on that RED or on that reserve and balance basis. So we were able to take a 5-minute collection and move it down to a 3-minute collection, which really makes it even that much more rational to use within a chiropractic setting.
Right. And then we were talking about that just before the podcast, because I had a question that, you know, now that everybody has these HRV apps, and we just wanted to ask you, like, what's the difference? And even for chiropractors out there that might be considering getting an HRV, what's the difference between the HRV app and the Pulse Wave Profiler?
Yeah, well, I sort of mentioned it before, and everybody should be checking their HRV. I mean, it's in your iWatch, it's in your Fitbit, you can go and download apps for free. You know, it's out there in the culture, and that's fabulous because it's not an unknown to people when they come in.
Right.
But here's the challenge with it is that, number one, and many of them, other than the heart rate, other than the Polar Strap that people are using, you have to take the data from the stream, whether it's from their finger on a camera or otherwise. And I can go through this quite a bit, but you have to then take it and run it through what's known as an FFT, which is a fast Fourier transform. And it's looking at the calculations of it.
Great.
When you go to take a stream of HR from a phone, you have to have a camera stabilization algorithm that comes along with it. And one of the bane of any collection is missed beats. And missed beats, you would think that's not that hard, right? They're incredibly hard to get a clean stream of beat data. And here's the coolest part. Every research grade technology says, yeah, you can do it, but you have to be able to have the right collection methodology and algorithm to do it. So we went out there, you know, and this is the luxury of owning a company. We went out there and looked at 13 different camera stabilization algorithms that were associated from picking up off the iPhone, Android, or even from the Polar heart rate. And not one of them passed our rigor of managing. Well, that's not true. One of them did.
Yeah.
And one of them did. And I'll tell you about the second one that is done, but it's clinical grade for physicians. Well, you can use it as a thing, but it interrelates to a physician.
Right.
But the other 12, if you want to say, could not manage missed beats. And we took them on a tour anywhere from 30 seconds to down to 2 minutes and 3 minutes, which was the extent of it. And I paid a lot of money to programmers to try and peel these things back because I would love to know. And the realities are is that it's tough to do. That's why you need to have a stabilization system if you're going to give clinical information.
Right.
If you're just looking at a string of data and you want to do a morning, non-clinical set point, not a bad idea. If you want to go and test yourself to see yourself pre and post fitness and see what happened in that interval of time, boom, that was right there, go ahead and use an HRV associated with your iWatch or Fitbit. But if you're going to track people in a clinical graded model and you want to do it on a, you know, as a doctor and give clinical advice through a, you know, a cohort of time, you know, that's there, a fractal that's right there between visits and whatever else, you got to use a very stable system, which is why we endorse the NeuroPulse.
Right.
So it's a very cool system.
No, that's awesome.
I don't know if that made any sense to anybody.
No, it does. And it just, I think just people know because, and then this is the other question. It's funny because Brandy just, I said, we got any questions for David, interviewing him for this podcast. And she said, we have one person who has it, right? So they're taking their HRV on their phone in the morning and after, and they're just regulating it. So if they look like they're tapped, they don't work out early in the morning. They do it in the afternoon. But in their mind, they can use sleep or they can use exercise to positively affect their HRV. And I'm just going to ask you just because I already know the answer, but what does chiropractic differentiate? How does it differently impact HRV compared to like sleeping or exercise?
Well, the good news is that, and I'll get to chiropractic in just a moment. The good news is that anything you do to influence your rest and restoration and your lifestyle through meditation or otherwise is going to bring you back to that neutral balance.
Yeah.
And one of the things that it can do, but it's more of a lagging indicator, is raise the reserve. Raising the reserve takes longer time. Mm-hmm. But chiropractic, and this is why it's so very, very cool in the chiropractic setting to look at HRV and to understand it. Chiropractic, through its adjustive model, has always been stimulative towards the autonomic nervous system. And you, if you're really thinking about the value of an adjustment many times is viewed by the patient and sadly by many chiropractors as removing an interference. Well, that's the truth, it does, but it stimulates the neurology to remove that interference. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
You have to stimulate a distracted and a dormant system, which has been locked into a pattern, to get the full benefit of it. We call that a primary subluxation. Mm-hmm. And so as a result of stimulating, especially where the parasympathetic feeds come from, we can unlock this locked in sympathetic dominant, engage and re-engage the lower parasympathetic responsiveness and give it a, you know, boost, if you would.
Yeah.
And Don, this is the genius of chiropractic, and it happened long before HRV was there, is that the great techniques didn't focus on playing the spine from top to bottom. The great techniques focused on where? Upper cervical, sacral, SOT, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the tone of the of that. And even when we're taking a look at the tonal models, which might be light force or instrument-based inputs or anything like that, they're looking at where the influence is in the central neural processor, not the regional processors. Mm-hmm. The Merrick chart is, although it's valuable, is not as valuable, if you will, as looking at the totality of these things. And when you give an upper cervical adjustment, you're going directly into where that vagal nerve tone is associated. If you're coming into a sacral adjustment and combining it, for instance, you know, with you know, the Lovett positives or anything else between the two, you're starting to take a look at sacral inputs of re-engaging not just the vagal tone, but the other parasympathetic feeds. So this is one of the great stories of chiropractic. You can't do that with exercise. You can't be specific with sleep. Those are adjunctive to what happens when you and I, as chiropractors, re-engage the central neural processor the way we do.
That's, and actually I have a great story for that, because I was explaining HRV and the reserves to a practice member who happened to, on his hobby, he fixed snowmobiles and he rebuilds engines. And so I was talking about how with the chiropractic adjustments, we're increasing efficiency, right? Neural spinal efficiency, to give extra excess energy to be able to build up your restore your reserves. And he said, that's exactly how you increase horsepower in an engine.
Yeah. That's exactly
right. You increase efficiency. And so I was like, that's so cool. So we're basically, I didn't know that with an engine. So I'm like, but it's the same thing. Is that if we increase efficiency, neural spinal efficiency in the spine, it has leftover energy at the end of the day that we can use to rebuild those reserves, which is pretty
cool. Well, and when you rebuild those reserves, you actually engage what the, you know, what the nervous system is supposed to do, is not just be in a survival reactive mode, but in a thriving mode, which means it's learning. And it's interesting, Don, because when we took HRV, we realized that it was the foundation to look at, and the reserve is the foundation for any longer term recovery. So when I was building the core score, which is the RED model, if you will, if you look under the core score, it's actually referred to as a neural efficiency index.
That's awesome.
That's what it's called. And the realities are is that the R standing for reserve is the input and the score from the HRV. The E stands for the energy or exhaustion, for that matter, of the postural loading, which is the it comes in at the second part. And the D stands for depth. And it means that if your reserve is low, and if you start to, you know, lose your ground, especially in a gravitational loaded model, and I don't know about you, but I'm living in gravity perpetually, is that ultimately the end stage of all of this breakdown of the subluxation is that it goes deeper into the end processor, which means you get sick with the subluxation. So the thermal is looking at the pre and postganglionic responses to a system that can't recover.
That's cool.
And that's where the core score, so it's a single number that allows people to have a conversation. And whether you use it or not, you should, but whether you use it or not, it's built upon the premise that you and I have been talking about, RED.
That's awesome. And I, like I said, the biggest thing I find in chiropractors will realize is it just changes your whole conversation. Because somebody's going to come in and their initial complaint is, oh, I hurt my low back lifting a garbage can.
And they're like, they should. And then we're like, how do we relate that to like your like your all spark, as we joke around, from Transformers is flickering, right?
Yeah. But Don, let's talk about that, because you know I think the patients have every right to come into our world mm-hmm. as a primary care provider and have a conversation that makes sense to them. And what makes sense to them is, I lifted a garbage can and my back blew up. That should be the conversation they come to you with. Yeah. I know it frustrates a lot of doctors. I know that they say, oh, I can't take another symptom conversation with my patients. Well, if I may be so bold, grow up. You know what? You know what? It's not that you're, and you know, it could be the symptoms of autism. You know, I'm just saying it doesn't have to be a back pain model.
Yeah.
But patients have the right, practice members have the right to view their health through their lens. Yeah. All right. Our responsibility is to then build from where their reality is and give them tools so that they can learn to believe and understand the way the human body works as we do. And so I get really frustrated at this junction in my life to hear this sort of negative input being pushed back on the patients of, oh my God, they don't get it. Yeah, they get it. They're living inside their own complex system, you know, doing it. And we can blame medicine, we can blame whatever, but you know what? That's our opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if you have a non-spinal tool like HRV, and they're using it on their iWatch and they're using it in their Fitbit, and there's this relationship, you can take a moment and talk about, you know, what chiropractic does that no one else does is it lights up the part of your nervous system that rebuilds your reserve. Let me show you how. Mm-hmm. And let me show you what happens if you don't do it. If you don't build your reserve, you're going to keep dropping down in your reserve. You're going to become vulnerable and you're going to get sick with a subluxation. So let me show you how to avert that by looking at what we can do for yourself, your families, your friends, your neighbors. You know, we care about it. And, you know, I was just doing an interview the other day, and, you know, it frustrates me, but it inspires me at the same time. You know, when you're taking a look at ultra capable athletes, there's a sort of go-to that says, do what it takes, you know, and if chiropractors are going to do what it takes to listen to the patients as they live in their community, and if they're going to do what it takes to change the conversation about what chiropractic is perceived as, then use the tools. You know, if X-ray was the storyline from 1895 to 2006, good on you. It hasn't gone away, but that doesn't mean it's the only tool you get to use. We use X-ray all the time in our story build. You do too.
Yeah.
You know,
part of the mix, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The realities is that you need to look at structure and function. And function doesn't have to be range of motion. Function means that we look deeper, which is the tagline of the insight, is that we look deeper into how the system can reorganize itself and think its way out of a problem under the guidance of a great chiropractor.
That's excellent. Now, I want to get two questions in before we get to the end, because I got this Dr. Keith Thompson out there who was asked me on social media because he wanted to know about this. How do you describe HRV in more of a simplistic model right to your practice member when you're doing it? Because we just went into the complexity of it for a chiropractor, but how would you in a simplistic way explain it to a practice member?
Well, I think that there's many analogies that can work. And we sort of touched on one.
Yeah.
I think one that has served people very, very well with it is foot on the gas pedal, foot on the brake. And right. So you can build the relationship. I'll go through a couple of these, but the idea is that if you constantly live your life with your foot on the gas pedal, eventually you're going to put an overload on your system. Mm-hmm. Equally as bad is that if you try and drive with your parking brake on, you're constantly fighting the process. And it's equally as bad, Don, to have your system locked into a parasympathetic set point as well.
Yeah.
And it actually in some ways worse, because the parasympathetic set point means that your ability to produce a sympathetic response, you and I, by the way, you know, be having that low adrenal responsiveness,
yeah,
means that we couldn't meet the demands
right
of that moment. And as a result of that, we were constantly having the driving brake on, the brake on while we were driving. And so we tried to push our way through. And that means that we actually ended up, you know, causing damage to the system, which you can see in the car. I will say, for the sake, and this is just a number I'm pulling, so please don't quote me on it.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just there. But, you know, it's a classic 80-20. 80% of the patients that we're going to see are going to plot left, which means to the sympathetic side, and lower than they should be. And that's just generally speaking, because the fight-flight response in society is so pervasive that they haven't drifted so far yet over to that lock-in on the parasympathetic side.
Yeah.
But when you do see somebody on the parasympathetic side, and this is going out to Keith Thompson, you know, that's your double, you know, watchfulness, because they are really, especially if they're low and on the right hand side, we refer to that as dormancy. Now, we don't get many of those done, because by the time they're plotting low and right, they're in the medical system. They're not even in the chiropractic system. They're sick. So that's just something to remember. Another analogy, you know, is what we talked about are the four quadrants. And if they go into, I think it's in our website, and if not, I know I did a setup for Don, for Bill Estep, and he put together a graphic that I built with him on the four different quadrants, and it gives some language that you're supposedly working with if they plot in these. But the biggest thing that I want them to say is, if it's in just language, is what you used, is that you were born to be healthy and express it so long as you had enough in your tank. And if you're, and just think about reserve even more so than the balance. The balance is what you and I as clinicians look at. Mm-hmm. And it's a second story. The first story you tell to your patients very simply is, either I'm satisfied or I'm not satisfied with how much reserve you bring me. Okay. Right. Your lifetime of stress, your lifetime of worry, your lifetime of difficult situations has left a stain on your nervous system. And as a result of that, you're lower than I'd like to do, but I have a solution. Mm-hmm. We're going to get you back to the center line and move you up. And when we get you into the green box, we're going to talk about how we can keep elevating you beyond where you are today. It's simple.
Yeah. And then one thing I like to add is that if I've done my thorough case history and dived into their life, and then their HRV reserve doesn't match what I think it should be, I'm going to preframe that we're going to see, as we go down and do reevaluations, if this continues to drop, that tells us that we've been burnt out for a long time and it's going to take a little while for that to come back up. Like, that's how I usually preframe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think that, you know, you used the term, I think it was unicorns and roses, you know. I think that many chiropractors have to remember this, and the HRV is a beautiful tool to look at this, is that we always, and thank goodness we have the understanding and the practicality, that when we adjust somebody, it raises and balances the nervous system. In this case, they show a better plot. But many times, we're catching people on a very slippery slope and a downslide.
Yeah.
And so even though we have best intentions, you know, chiropractors need to realize that when you start looking deeper than their symptoms, than their range of motion, than their pliability of the spine, and we start to look at the neurofunctional status, many times they've been locked so deeply into this rotten pattern that we're catching them on the downslope. And you need to recognize that if on scan 2, scan 3, as you're going down, they're locked and low, you have to have the conversation with somebody twofold to say, listen, I'm thrilled that you're feeling better. I'm thrilled that the other aspects of your care are showing the improvement, but the one that matters is this one, because this is the one that you're going to need to have higher to keep you moving forward. And I'm on this sort of soapbox before I ask another question, but you know, in this unicorns and roses principle, we can learn a lot from the MDs. I'm telling you, we can learn a lot, because MDs really use their data to predict and make clinical decisions, and we'll call it care planning. And in some ways, they're detached, if you would. And you know, I went and had I had a regular checkup. I hadn't had one done in a long, long time. And he went through each line, you know, of my urinalysis and blood tests and everything else that were there. And just so everybody knows, I'm going to be around for a while.
Okay, that's good.
But, you know, the harsh realities is that they're simply, they're not asking me the person. They're not looking at me the person. They're looking at the data stream.
Yes.
And they're kind of going, well, we, you know, we could give you, believe it or not, my vitamin D was a little low. I think it was, you know, gray winter and whatever else. But, you know, and he said, well, you need to supplement yourself with vitamin D. And I thought, where does that fit in the whole mix of this human being called David? He could care less.
Right.
When we use HRV and we put it towards a vital response, we have the ability, because we're salutogenic versus pathogenic, to build that into our storyline. And you should. You shouldn't just say, well, like the MD, you're low and left. You should say, and that tells me, and we need to, and this will change because you are. You
know, and this, and this, this is what it will mean to you, because you found out enough about that person that you'll know how it will relate or improve their quality of life.
So well said, you know, so well said. And I just want to remind people that it's technologies like the EMG, the thermal, and the RED, and pardon me, the HRV, too many three-letter acronyms, that really distinguish you. You should be using your level of knowledge and passion for this vitalistic perspective to be your hedgehog in the community. For you to be, you know, or your purple cow, whatever they're calling it, but for you to have this sense that you are so proud of it. It's not a marketing tool, but it becomes the distinguishing principle. Because yeah. I have to tell you, Don, that if this is my, you know, and yours too, I'm pretty sure, and Brandy's predictive approach, is that if chiropractic in its development gets stalled into being a symptom-based model, which we really see happening in terms of looking even at spinal function and spinal wellness, whatever that term means, we don't really have much of a future, you know, in terms of a profession, because, you know, it's not that unique to manipulate somebody. But if we can show people that their vitality shifts, and we can show people that their HRV is moving in that direction, we have the ability to combine performance-based technologies and reporting and take us out of what I went through, which was a physical examination. Mm-hmm. And when you can build that in and talk about the subluxation, and it's not a dirty word. Subluxation is a beautiful concept because it talks about a complex system that's doing the best it can with what it has at all times, but it just can't get over the hump. And what we talk about of engaging them in a chiropractic setting is arousing their innate responsiveness and giving it an energetic boost so that it can keep the momentum going and build itself to the next level. And who wouldn't want that? Mm-hmm. Like, who wouldn't want that? Listen, even if you're in stage 4 cancer, we've talked about it. You know, Yuri Gidron did the HRV studies. You know, and he's, Yuri and I have had a wonderful conversations, but he did the HRV studies looking at stage 4 colorectal cancer patients in the European theater. And he published and said that the best predictor is no longer tumor size to look at how the patient is going to recover, but HRV. If the patient exhibits in their care modeling high HRV, it's much more predictable that they're going to live longer than it is looking at the size of the tumor. And he's passionate about chiropractic. He's a medical researcher. And he's passionate about chiropractic because it does what your patient was saying, is it adds that boost where others don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just makes total sense, right? And I think the thing I love is that once you start doing HRV, because I only started doing HRV probably about 4 years ago, and innately I knew we're dealing with people that came in with a back pain or hurt their neck or a headache, and we knew that they weren't healthy, that they're very sick. But when you start doing HRV, you realize how many sick people we are working with. Like, oh, it's yeah. insane. Like, there's so many people that are super sick and they're just hurtling down that road to chronic degenerative disease. And we would have never been able to catch up on that if we were just doing our orthopedic range of motion, the other tests, because this is just so important to what is their vital tapped energy to heal their whole body, right? So I think that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I'll just add on that is that, and again, I'll lean on Yuri Gidron's work, is that, you know, he is a medical researcher, but trained in psychoneuroimmunology. He's sort of this genius of PNI. And actually studied in the same university that Antonovsky came out of, which was Tel Aviv. And Antonovsky, you know, posited and wrote the whole principle of salutogenesis. And one of the things that we know with HRV is that state of mind is as associative as physical function. And so when we take a look at why HRV is so critical, we know that even though you get the physical inputs, which could be shown in EMG and thermals, and you continue to have a low setting, you really have, as a doctor, not a therapist, as a doctor, an opportunity and perhaps a responsibility to ask, as you did, what's going on in your thought process? What's going on in your brain?
Yep.
You know, when you leave here, you're well adjusted and we've set you up to have this incredible experience. What is it in your life that pulls you down? And I'm not suggesting you need to be their therapist, but, you know, let's take again that medical doctor. You know, he said I was low in vitamin D. I didn't know that. How would I know? You know, I mean, how would I know it? But because somebody in a point of authority and used a data set like that gave me that, I'm now aware that, you know what, I should be in the sun more or do whatever, you know, take action.
Right.
If you as a chiropractor have this HRV and you realize that on scan 2 and scan 3 and from your case history and from your conversations that they're fighting through a lot of stuff that you're not, you know, in there, just shine a light on it. Just have a conversation with them that says, I care enough to talk to you about this. No, I'm not going to set up, you know, talk therapy sessions with you.
Yeah.
You know, that's somebody else's world. But yeah. I am going to say I care enough to mention it too.
Right. You don't have to be the one to fix that, but you can be the one that illuminates that issue, that would help what we're doing and it all work together because it is all together.
Well, you know, I loved it when I took myself, and this was probably one of those aha transformative shifts in my life, is that I got really good at being a doctor, you know, and what I mean by a doctor, the educator, the clinician, you know, top of my game. And I loved that part of me. And then I put it in a box and no longer had to be their doctor. I knew that I was bringing that every day to my patients. And I took that hat off and I put it aside because I knew they were getting that. And then I gave myself the ability to be their trusted advisor.
Yeah.
And when I became their trusted advisor, I didn't have to be this one trick pony that was what their expectation was.
Right.
I could be, and it wasn't being a friend. Being friendly was the bigger story. But being their trusted advisor meant that I could have that shine a light moment, that I could have those other conversations. And I could, as a trusted advisor, and I had long put aside my practice building hat, you know, mm-hmm. it was this certainty that said, you know, every child on this planet should be checked regularly, not only as a chiropractor, but also with their HRVs,
yeah.
You know. Why wouldn't you? And you know what? When they come in and have an HRV, we'll check their other spinal nerve inputs because we care.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we created the 4G family practice, which was that four generational practice model. And when we were doing it, and this was, you know, I began HRV a little bit sooner than you did, but when we began the HRV, it became the rationale as to why we check kids. Because
right.
Most chiropractors think that they have to check kids through their spine. We check kids through their nervous system. And we check kids through their nervous system by using an HRV.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And now for checking kids, you have an ear clamp, don't you?
Yeah, we have a secondary input in the what's called the NeuroPulse. Unfortunately, it can't be on the wired version. You have to get it on the wireless version. We just couldn't build it, the morphology of it. It's a plug-in adapter, which allows us to ear clip, but we're actually in the development of actually a finger sleeve as well. Because one of the things that you have with HRV collection that you have to be very careful with, which is one of the reasons that the cameras don't work on phones as well, is artifactual motion. Just cycling back to that, one of the things, Don, that happens is that every time you move your hand, you change the pressure pulse that's coming through it. Mm-hmm. Or if you have it on your ear and it tends to move a bit. So it's pretty hard to stabilize perfectly. And what we know is that, and we've done so much lab work in this, is that when you have an altered beat, and Don, you can play with this a little bit. If you just press just a little bit more on your sensor, you're going to see the heart rate gets a little different. Or if you wiggle your hand a bit. If you have a really good camera stabilization software, which is what we're so proud of, we've got one that doesn't cheat, that detects the missed beats, and allows us to reorganize around it without having to restart the test. It absolutely detects rogue beats and allows us to manage towards the calculations. And it's not cheating. You know, mm-hmm. it's absolutely looking at gapping. It probably is a patentable process. One of the things that we know is that it's still incredibly valid when you fix your hand into a system, or if you take an ear beat, or if you take a finger clip and hold the hand in a stable environment, or hold the child in a stable environment, you get absolutely coherent data strips. So we know you can do it, and we get, like I said, hundreds of thousands of good data strips that are looking at this. And what we do, like every good company should be doing, is that we do QA. And what we do is that we'll just take a tranche of data and just go and take a tranche of data periodically. And it could be coming from, you know, Addis Ababa and Edmonton, you know, yeah. It doesn't really matter. They're humans are humans. And we'll just run some strips on it. And with machine learning, now, which means that we can run, you know, these really cool, almost artificial intelligent algorithms, we can take a look at the different strips. And we can start to take a look now at what trends are when people first come in a chiropractic setting, what trends are after they've had 12 visits. You know, I jokingly refer to the fact that we'll get down to, you know, seeing a one-legged Lithuanian who smokes,
who's
52 years old, what his predictive capacities are going to be when he has 12 visits under a chiropractic care model. We're not that far off.
That's cool. So in closing, I was wondering if you could just maybe tell some of our listeners a little bit more if they don't have an HRV or they don't have a substation or if they want to get some more information, how can they get more information on this or get a hold of you or your company?
Oh, well, thanks, Don. You know, I think that one of the things is that we're the leading technology company within the examination field within chiropractic. And so we cater to and serve thousands and thousands of chiropractors. You can reach us at insightcla.com, subluxation.com. They both work the same. If you happen to have an existing subluxation station, which is the silver box as you have, Don, you can use a wired HRV system, and that's a great one, and you can just contact us for those, and there's a bit of a price savings on some of those, and it gets you into the game. What we would recommend is that in 2018, you know, when we're making this publication, the world is wireless. And yeah. If you're really as dedicated to your craft, we would recommend that you take a look at the wireless NeuroPulse, which is a beautiful Bluetooth system, and you don't need the other systems. For instance, Keith Thompson bought one of those. You don't need the other systems. So if you don't have a subluxation station but want to start into chiropractic instrumentation, now you can do that by getting it. And so just go on to it, and it's info@insightcla.com. And you can join us.
And so some people that might have a substation, you also have a Facebook group where the people put case studies in there. Can you mention what the name of that is so that people could follow?
Yeah, please. It's on Facebook. It's Insight CLA Forum. It's really critical for those of you that are listening that you join the conversation. It's a closed group, so we monitor it pretty hard. It's it's designed to have a clinical relationship. I love those cases, Don, and my shout out here is and it's working, is that if you are an Insight user and you are watching and clinically and you have either a case or a conversation or a comment, jump in. The reason is that you'll learn more than sitting on the sidelines. There is no bad question. I promise you, it's that kind of group. of where it's haters are not allowed. You know, you're just not allowed.
Right.
It's there to learn and experience, because it's not about scanning. It's about elevating the excellence of chiropractic worldwide. And I'm very proud to take the reins of CLA, because CLA began, 27 years ago. And it reshaped the conversation of what chiropractic was. And I started in it 22 years ago, working with Patrick and Christopher. And, I'm exceedingly proud of the work that we do, because we reach into, I think it's 40 countries now. Wow. We have this cloud-based platform that means we can offer amazing services. And if you could work, if you guys could pull the green hood off of the World of Oz, you wouldn't believe what we're planning. Like, you wouldn't believe how we never stop dreaming about what it's like to be the best chiropractor and the best profession on the planet.
That's awesome. Well, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you too, because I know you didn't have to take over CLA. No. And I know the main reason you did it is because of your passion. And I want to thank you on behalf of chiropractic. Chiropractic needs that, right? Everybody, it seems to be going towards a less fix the low back pain on someone in 7 visits, even though they're dying of a chronic degenerative disease. Right. Like, and this really helps to change the conversation. So I want to thank you so much.
Yeah, Don. And one of the great things that it has allowed me to do, and I was pretty connected beforehand, but when I started to take on the reign, I started to realize what you had just said, is that there are so many influencers and people that want chiropractic to be as we've discussed today. The idea of chiropractic being the static back care model is still taught at many, many schools, but there is a rising tide, which talks about the relevancy. And it's people like yourself and Brandy and Peter Kevorkian and the schools like Sherman and New Zealand and Northwestern, believe it or not, is coming up. And Palmer is talking the conversations, and Parker's getting back to it. And Life West, of course, and Life. You know, these are the schools that are putting graduates into it. And so for those of you who might be listening and having a bad day, or wondering why you chose chiropractic, or wondering if the next step is there, I promise you, this is a guy who's been in the trenches a long, long time. I promise you, you may have heard this before, but there are better times ahead. This is a grand profession that has learning, but it's a very young profession. We're only 100 and some years old, and in terms of professions, we've passed that critical mass of sticking around. It's not going away.
Right.
But now it's time to be mature. And, I said this in Mile High one time as I was speaking there. And it says this, is to be a profession, you must profess. You have to stand for something. And, if you're going to stand and be a professional, know your craft for sure. Don't be afraid of the marketplace, meaning the marketplace is yours to control. And profess what you know to be true. And I'm telling you, here's the truth that I know, is that chiropractic works. It works. It's as simple as that. It just works.
Well, and I was just going to say too, I just got a shout out from a first year student at CMCC that they're listening to this podcast, and they're really enjoying the conversation too. So we can actually add CMCC into that too, because there are people at CMCC that are listening to this. And so that's great. So hopefully if we can influence people to kind of get a little bit. It's funny because I used to call it wider scope on chiropractic, but I gotta be careful of that, because now that means drugs. So
yeah, I mean, you fought that battle pretty hard. You know where that took you.
Yeah, I know.
Well, listen, a shout out to CMCC, my alma mater. I taught there for some time in different capacities, and it'd be my great fulfillment in life if CMCC started to reiterate the use of the word subluxation at some point.
That's awesome. So we're proud of you, the young pups at CMCC that reached out to me. So we're saying hi to you guys. So thanks again, David, for being on the podcast. Love you, man.
Don, it's my great pleasure to hang with you. And if we can raise the bar just a little bit, good for us.
That's awesome. So everybody, get out there, get an HRV, deepen the conversation, shift the conversation, and don't forget to crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.